From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from TIAA CREF Tuition Financing, managing independent 529 plan, tomorrow's college tuition today at i529.org/today.
And hello, and welcome again to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast from our studios across from the state capitol. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio, joined as always by my chipper and happy and perky friends from the Capitol Press Corps.
Well, Anthony actually, is perky.
Actually, Kate is more perky, I think, today. Didn't you say you'd had your coffee?
I did.
I'm offended that I'm not perky.
Okay, well, you can both be perky. You'll Kate be. Fulmar from the Mercury News, Anthony York from Capitol Weekly. So, as always, we're going to go over some of the more interesting or more salient topics from the political world this week. But to start with, last week on the podcast, our friend Mr. York made a large prediction about the world of Indian gaming agreements. And his prediction was, let me play a clip.
And something tells me I'm looking into my crystal ball, Compax next week. Compax.
Indian gaming Compax.
Didn't you say that last week?
Yeah. Okay. And look, we just mentioned it. I was right.
You got to give him credit. So, Anthony, last week you said that we would have deals on the Compax.
No, I said that we would be discussing the Compax. I said the Compax, and I did
the crystal ball thing.
That's right.
So what
That's
happened?
Right. What happened? There was a big protest this week. The hotel and restaurant employees were here protesting, trying to put pressure on the speaker, and even crashed one of his fundraisers this week. The deal stalled. I think there's a lot of division, and we'll see what happens. I guess if it happens, it'll get folded in either to the budget stuff or to the end of the session.
But even then, I mean, is there any consensus yet on whether these side deals to negotiated Indian gaming compacts are enforceable?
No, I mean, that's part of what's up in the air, whether or not they're enforceable, whether or not the Senate would take them up, whether or not the tribes will take them up, which tribes would agree to such an agreement, which tribes see it as an infringement on their sovereignty. So, luckily for the three of us, that's a headache for other people to deal with.
What I found interesting about the subject just quickly this week was that I sensed what I think was a slight variation in the position of the governor's office. You know, they've said that they believe in the compacts, but this week they were slightly saying that, well, if the tribes came back to them, they would consider something different, and which puts the ball in the court of the tribes asking for something new to the compacts.
Well, and of course, now that we've said they're stalled, that means that they'll probably move next week. So if anyone wants a prediction on the fourth race at Golden Gate this weekend, I've got a horse.
Call Anthony.
Yeah.
Anthony York at CapitalWeekly.net.
And that's your .net, remember.
.net. Okay, well, on to our big things that happened this week, since now we have put Anthony in his place for last week, though he claims he didn't make the prediction. Healthcare, back on the agenda, and big news about the Democratic plans. Kate?
Yes. Well, the two Democratic plans, one by Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez of Los Angeles and another one by Senate President Pro Tem Don Parada of Oakland, have been merged. There is now a unified Democratic plan. It will be carried by Nunez as the lead author.
Assembly Bill 8.
Thank you, John, for those keeping score.
For those wonks at home who want to look up the bill. Yes.
www.leginfo.ca.gov. So read all about it. A lot of the details of their plans were similar to begin with. They both had, for example, a 7.5%. And I'm going to call it payroll assessment
for folks who don't. The scourge of trying to call this thing something. All the emails and calls we get of the four people who listen to the podcast,
yes,
whether it's an assessment, a fee, a tax.
Yes.
We hear all of you.
I'm going with assessment. I think
Good.
Assessment is neutral.
I think it is neutral.
So the revised AB-8 has a 7.5% payroll assessment. The biggest concession that Don Parada, the Senate leader, made was he dropped the requirement for what's known in awful healthcare jargon as an individual mandate. That basically means that individuals are required to carry health insurance, not unlike individuals in California are required to carry car insurance.
And that's something Governor Schwarzenegger's proposal, which never made its legislation, had too, that you're
exactly
required to have health insurance.
Exactly. So that's been dropped from the unified Democratic version. What else, John?
Well, let's see. You and I were both at that news conference. I think the other things that were significant out of this omnibus, universal, allied, democratic plan are this notion that there are no longer exemptions for the smallest of small businesses.
Right,
that was
right.
taken out. It seems like there was a third one that was of note. But, I mean, what I think the headline or the bottom line, I should say, of all of this is this seems to be the vehicle now for negotiations. This sets right. a stage for some horse trading, does it not?
Yeah. No, I think it has to. And it also, I think, gives the Democrats a significant amount of leverage because there isn't a Schwarzenegger plan that's written into legislation per se. So now this appears to be the vehicle unless something emerges. And because Fabian Nunez's name is on it, he has significant power in working with the governor on what the final health care plan, if indeed there is one, looks like. And if they don't like what the governor wants, the Democrats who control the legislature can always pass this and throw it downstairs and see what happens.
I mean, is there any way, can either of you see any way in which some bill lands on the governor's desk and he vetoes it?
Well, that's part of the calculation, right? I mean, is he so enamored of the idea of passing something this year that looks like health care reform that he'll take whatever's thrown down to him? I'm sure that his aides, at least one of whom listens and emails us, I'm sure that his aides would say no. No, that will not happen. You know, I just don't know. I think that remains to be seen.
Well, and I was going to say, I mean, even though there are people at the Capitol and in healthcare circles who will tell you otherwise, the reality is there is less daylight between the Democratic plan and the governor's proposed January plan than there is just about anything else under discussion right now.
Right.
I mean, clearly, the single-payer folks who are on one side of the spectrum are farther away, and the legislative Republicans and some members of the business community are way far away over here. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's hard to see how they would be so diametrically opposed. They don't really seem like it. They both have an assessment on businesses. It depends on what level that would be to pay for this. They both talk about more responsibilities, I believe, on health insurance companies, about how much money they make goes to actual health care. You know, 85% of the premiums, I believe, is still in Assembly Bill 8. I hope so.
Maybe.
Kate just gave me a look. Someone will call me and tell me. But, I mean, again, the differences seem much smaller than everybody else in this. But that being said, I mean,
and they actually and they both require or put some sort of requirement on insurers that they have to cover everybody. I mean, part of the insurance industry right now is that you figure out who you want to insure based on what their medical conditions are.
Well, I actually think one of the modifications, that may have been the other one I was struggling for, that there is some modification to the notion of guaranteed issues, so to speak. In other words,
a high risk.
There are certain people who I think the Democrats are now telling healthcare companies they don't have to offer the coverage to.
Reporters, for example.
Yeah, the news media. But
yes.
I mean,
but the vast majority of people, I think, have
But
to
again, I think, you know, philosophically, we are back to this point that the governor and Democrats don't seem to be that far away. And for me, the real question as we go into the weeks after the budget, the negotiations on this, where does the business community come down? I continue to come back to that.
Right.
The business community is not necessarily unified. There are somewhat divergent opinions out there. But the business community has great sway with this governor, and they are the ones who, fair enough, were the main reason that the last health care reform was turned over by referendum.
Yeah.
They were the ones who financed that campaign and could easily come back.
Yeah. And I mean, you hit on this, though. It depends. I don't think you can talk about the business community as one entity.
Yeah.
You know, it was the restaurants and a lot of the other big businesses
and the retailers too, yeah,
who don't traditionally provide health care, whereas a lot of, say, the grocery stores, we see this new coalition with the CEO of Safeway. A lot of these places who are already providing health care for their employees are on board. I mean, it doesn't impact their bottom line as much. So I think, you know,
well, and they have an interest in seeing other businesses who are their competitors doing what they're doing,
sure,
which is providing health, you know, health insurance, because that's a, you know, competitive disadvantage.
And I think on that issue of the political reality, Speaker Nunez in his news conference on Thursday was very upfront about what we all know. He said the greatest fear he has is that this thing is overturned by referendum, that it is put on the ballot if someone doesn't like it.
And I know that's something we've talked about here. I mean, keep in mind that the referendum last time on SB2, which was the proposal authored by Senator John Burton, that would have required employers to provide health insurance. That was referended barely, and that was after a united effort to repeal the bill, led by the governor and the Chamber of Commerce. I don't know that you would have that kind of unity on the other side. And even that barely passed. Mm-hmm. So,
and it was a much more modest health insurance plan than either Schwarzenegger or the Democrats are talking about. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think it was roughly 1 million Californians who would have been covered under SB2.
One of the other things that struck me about the Democratic plan, just briefly, joint compromise plan, and it made some of the news coverage at the beginning, but I can see this being one of the avenues the opponents are going to push in the coming weeks, is this 7.5% assessment, as we're calling. I'm using air quotes again for people who will be listening. But the 7.5%...
Those don't show up on radio,
they
John.
Don't. And that's why I don't use them in my stories. The 7.5%, that's the air quote, assessment, is no longer set in stone in this proposal. It does say that the state agency, quasi-agency that would deal with these things, Mr. MIB being the acronym that all of us hate.
You missed some air quotes there, Jeff.
Yes, but the but the state agency that oversees how, you know, the way that this thing is administered could increase that assessment on businesses. And I bet a small amount of my small reporter salary that becomes one of those opposition points that the opponents will say, you know, this could be a tax
an
of up to 14%, an unlimited tax on da da.
And if you're wrong, do we get to clip that into our podcast?
Yes, we do. We do. A moderator's prerogative, we don't. But I mean,
shoot, Anthony, we really need to learn how to work the audio equipment.
But the policy people will say that's a smart thing to do because you don't want to lock yourself in. But from a political reality, I can see the campaign exactly. Unlimited tax on businesses. And
that's got to be one of the talking point number one.
Yeah. How long into the summer do you guys think this goes? I mean, we've got to get the budget out of the way whenever the heck that happens. But I mean, how long do they have? Do they have till the end of session? Is that what we call the deadline?
This is the first year, obviously, in the 2-year session. I mean, I think most people think they probably will try to pass something this year. Even Nunez and Parada yesterday said that these negotiations will continue after the budget. We'll get the budget out of the way first, and then they'll come back August 20th after recess and work on probably this will dominate the agenda for the month of September.
Isn't there a danger, too, though, that the way things happen at the Capitol, where there are always these 11th-hour deals in something, you know, workers' comp, 3 a.m. in the morning or something like that, that's a danger for this, is it not? I mean, all the people who have something at stake and how delicate an alliance could be forged on this, and then you cut some backroom deal?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
And those deals are often – I think those deals do happen the end of the first year of a session, but they're much more common at the second year, the end of the second year. So it just depends how badly everybody wants a deal, how badly the governor wants a deal. I think he does want it. He's laid this out in his State of the State as his top priority, and I'm sure he'll be doing everything he can to get a deal this year.
Do either of you know what the deadline is for getting something on the February 08?
I think that's passed.
It's passed. Okay, so I'm just wondering if some of the timing might play into...
For getting something on the February ballot?
Yeah.
The legislature to put something on or for... Because it's effectively too late
I'm thinking about the referendum, and I'm wondering if when this is passed might play in at all to how long the opponents would have to gear up for a referendum.
Yeah, well, if this bill passed in September, they would have...
I think even that becomes a moot point because any bill that passes is going to have an enactment date of a couple of years out. I mean, even the Democratic version now says 2010. So there would be time to overturn a bill before it ever went into effect.
Point.
Which I think would give them plenty of time to marshal their forces.
And which is what happened with SB2.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's talk about power politics at the Capitol on a different level here as topic number two. With some interesting goings on the last couple of weeks with the California Correctional Peace Officers Association, often referred to as the Prison Guards Union, though they don't like to be called that. But, Anthony, you were watching some of that this week. What happened?
Well, the news this week was that the CCPOA was opposing the confirmation of the state's top negotiator, Dave Gilb, who's the head of the Department of Personnel Administration. They were successful in delaying his confirmation vote for a couple of weeks, but ultimately, the Senate Rules Committee recommended unanimously that Gil be confirmed.
And this is the person who negotiates contracts for
right.
state workers.
The lead negotiator. Right. And now CCPOA has been without a contract for more than a year. They're complaining that the state is not negotiating in good faith, and they tried to take out Gil as a way of voicing the, and demonstrating their displeasure. They lost, and this is the second big loss in a row now on correctional issues for CCPOA. Earlier this year, the legislature passed AB 900, which is a big prison reform package that the union opposed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of legislators decided to buck the union and go ahead and support the bill. So,
what do you make of that?
It's hard to tell. You know, the CCPOA has been very effective at playing both sides of the political aisle, but I think the Schwarzenegger administration has changed that somewhat. This governor and this particular association do not get along. I think that's clear.
That's an understatement.
CCPOA led the charge along with the teachers and the nurses in the special election, and they spent big money on Phil Angelides. Well, not big money, right. Not as big as they normally do. But
I'll never forget the big
billboards that they
drove around the Capitol with the governor in a relatively unflattering paparazzi photo from the beach in Hawaii with a bathing suit on, and they just drove that thing around the Capitol summer.
And the horns too.
Right. And the horns.
They just took that
red Schwarzenegger with little devil horns.
Right. That was outside their headquarters in
right.
Sacramento.
West Sacramento.
Yeah, the billboard read, "The devil is in the details."
Where every IKEA shopper could see it. It's right there at the entrance to IKEA.
Well, so. And so they've taken this thing now. They filed what? They filed legal action for an arbitration issue or
something?
They're going
to. This gets into the arcane details of labor contracts, but
give it a shot.
In 2001, Gray Davis signed a deal with the union, with CCPOA, that linked their salaries to the Highway Patrol. People in the administration refer to it as the devil's deal because for some reason the dollar figure, they have to be within $666 of the Highway Patrol's salaries. CHP
Cue
says,
the music.
Yeah. Or the horns, whichever. The Highway Patrol has filed a complaint with the Employee Relations Board, PERB, the Public Employee Relations Board, seeking to divorce themselves from that linkage, saying that it affects their ability to negotiate. And the Highway Patrol is expected to get a pay raise come July 1st. The state has made it clear they do not intend to pass that pay raise along to the prison guards. Their argument is that this contract has expired. And the prison guards are getting ready, or excuse me, CCPOA, is getting ready to file. Mike Jimenez, the president of CCPOA, told me they're going to file a suit in federal court trying to get that pay raise and ensure that linkage between them and the Highway Patrol continues.
What's interesting in some senses, and this kind of backs away from this week's story and the story about the union, is just this notion of how the salaries are figured. The guards' salary linked to Highway Patrol, other salaries linked to local sheriff's departments across the state. So it's like a down the line triggering effect.
Right.
One group gets a raise, and within a span of a year and a half, every law enforcement officer or correctional officer in the state gets a subsequent raise.
Right.
Well, like for the San Jose Newspaper Guild's raises to be linked to the CHP.
To CCPOA, yeah. CHP. And CHP, they get automatic raises every year because their salaries are configured on, based on what happens at the five largest police agencies locally. So if cops in LA get a raise, that means that CHP patrolmen get a raise, which means if you extend this out, that members of the CCPOA get a raise too. So it's the illustration of the trigger that you're talking about.
And all of this, and I know this is a side issue from topic two, and I didn't warn either of you that I was thinking this, but it just came into
Excellent.
My mind. But doesn't all of this politically could easily trigger that whole outrage among the public with the way that public employees get money or how they're paid or their benefits, which leads back into the initiative that was cleared for circulation this week.
Oh, Keith Richmond's?
Yes, of reform of pensions by former Republican Assembly Member Keith Richmond authored. And I mean, all of that triggers back into this whole notion of the way that government treats its workers, and are they treated better than people in the private sector?
Although I think when you're talking about cops, that doesn't, you know, people don't feel the same way about their highway patrolmen or their local police officers as they do about, you know, the milk testers.
Somebody at DMV. Yeah,
exactly. But I think you're right. I mean, the pensions issue is something that we're going to be talking about in the state and nationally. Keith Richmond's tried this before when he was in the assembly, tried to get the governor on board, and we'll see if the governor's interested in taking this on next year.
Just one other political thought. I don't know if either of you have a thought on it. Anthony, and you did a lot of reporting on this story this week. From a political perspective, the prison guards union, what might they be thinking, do you think, in terms of their political role? Everybody kept waiting for them. This is what I'm thinking of. Everybody kept waiting for them to drop money in the gubernatorial race last year against Schwarzenegger for Angelides.
Which
they largely never really did it.
They would have done it if Angelides was viable. I mean,
right.
Now we'll get nasty emails from Phil Angelides.
And so, but are they looking at anything else, do you think? Are they, I mean, term limits doesn't really play into this, and perhaps they could put money or not put money into there. But
yeah, I think they have too.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. They over the last decade, they're one of those groups that you look at as a big player in money politics in California. Are they still?
I mean, I'm wondering if clearly they've still got money to spend, and they've still got clout. But I do think that that some of the contracts that Gray Davis signed with them, which had, I don't remember, but 20% raises over a couple of years. And some of the hardball politics that they're known for playing, I don't want to say tarnished. Tarnished isn't the right word, perhaps, but that's dimmed their standing somewhat. And also, unlike a lot of people, Schwarzenegger really doesn't seem to be cowed by them.
Yeah, but I think they are major players still. I mean, These things do ebb and flow, and I wouldn't say this is the end of CCPOA.
Oh, no.
They may not have, and I think a lot of this is a reflection of the increased pressure that is on the prison system with the federal government getting involved. And, there were certain actions. I mean, they wanted to hold up this entire prison reform because they wanted to use it as leverage to get a new contract, they said. So, it's hard to know how much of this opposition. There was no way that the legislature was just going to sit by and allow the federal government to come in and take control of the prisons.
Well, and I was going to say we may be talking prisons next week again because there's a very big hearing here in Sacramento next week of the two federal judges who are overseeing this whole thing and have threatened to take major control of the system. Well, let's pivot, if we shall, from salaries of one group of state workers to salaries of a much more high-profile group of state workers. The California
California Citizens Compensation Commission.
Met this week.
Quadruple C?
The CCCC.
Yes.
Met this past week to do their annual review of how much constitutional officers, the governor, lieutenant governor, et cetera, and members of the legislature are paid. Kate and I were also at that event together.
Yes, I feel so close to you this week.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And what was their decision, Kate? What did they say?
Well, their decision was that they split the baby, as it were. There were some folks on the commission. This is a citizens' commission formed in 1990?
Ballot initiative.
Ballot initiative that rather than having lawmakers set their own salaries, has a group of citizens who are appointed by the governor set salaries for lawmakers. And they went for a number of years without giving I think from more or less 2000 until 2005, didn't give anybody raises. And then they gave a pretty big bump in 2005 and a decent sized bump last year as well. So there were some folks on this commission who were saying, the state still has a deficit. We're still too poor. And we should only give really modest raises. And then there was another group that said, cost of living is somewhere between 3.5% and 4.5%, and we should give raises of 3.5% and 4.5% to everybody, and then give a special boost to the attorney general and the superintendent of public instruction because their local counterparts city attorneys, district attorneys, county school superintendents make a whole heck of a lot more than they do. And the ultimate compromise, which was approved unanimously, is that Jerry Brown...
I don't think it was unanimous. Wasn't there one?
There was one member absent, but it was 6-0.
Oh.
Yeah. But
she's a better reporter than I am.
Sorry. Jerry Brown, the attorney general and former governor, is getting a 5% raise, which I don't remember the exact numbers, but brings his salary up to roughly $185,000 a year. Ditto for Jack O'Connell, the superintendent of public instruction, and everybody else, including the governor, gets another 2.75%. That hypothetically brings Schwarzenegger's salary to about $212,000, but Schwarzenegger, as we all know, does not take his salary.
But he uses that money on his office.
Yes, he does.
So does use it somewhere. I thought one of the most interesting factoids out of that whole thing was this notion that a young person right out of law school at one of the top firms in the state on average is getting paid only $15,000 less than the attorney general. At least this was the argument made. Now we've got to see somebody to actually confirm this happens.
But I'm busy studying for the LSAT.
Right, exactly. We're all getting out of the news business, but only makes 15 grand on average less than the attorney general of the state was making. You know, which I think says more about the private sector than it does anything else. I mean,
to me, and I have to admit, I've never done a salary survey myself. That defied credulity. I mean, I think what they were saying is that a recent law school graduate at really one of the swank top flight firms makes six figures, high six figures.
I bought into it more than you did.
I happen to know a recent law school graduate, and I don't know that they all make high six figures right off the bat. Certainly, it was striking to see how much more, you know, district attorneys and city attorneys in L.A. and San Jose make as compared to Jerry Brown.
And I believe that the commission said that the members of the legislature, rank and file members of the legislature, would make about $113,000 a year
now. I don't have it in front of me.
And so that's
per diem.
Plus per diem, which is another issue. But
that, minus pension. They don't have a pension.
Hey,
either do I.
But, right, exactly.
Good point. Me neither.
But I think that brings them up from the base pay for a long time was about $99,000 for a member of the legislature. Uh-huh. So in the last few years, they've come up, about $13,000, $14,000, something like that.
And leadership makes more.
And leadership makes more. Speaker, pro tem, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And then these take effect, I believe, in December.
December 3rd. Third, I think the first Monday in December. Yeah.
Right. So, and never a popular thing with people that that elected officials are going to get raises. And I guess, you know, you can debate whether or not it's real. And of course, the next question for reporters always is, are you going to accept the pay raise?
Yeah.
And we saw a few legislators say this week, right off the bat, send out press releases, I'm not taking the pay raise. I'm not going to do it. But Anthony, you bring up a good point, the per diem, which is something people around the state, I don't think really know that members of the legislature get this daily stipend
tax-free
stipend for food and lodging and things like that, but it adds up into another whole extra amount of money. Yeah. And there is an initiative being circulated on that issue to do away with the per diem.
Right.
So.
Well, and you know that the raises for lawmakers are going to be, you know, fodder for the anti-tweaking term limits campaign too. Yeah. Of course,
all of that seems like it'll get folded in somehow. Before we leave, every now and then we seem to do a little, I don't know what we would call the segment of something unusual out of the week's political news. And I don't think there's any way avoiding the one this week of more news of our jet-setting governor, who is, you want to speak some French, Anthony, and
no,
tell
no,
us
no,
where
no,
he's going?
Spanish, California Public Schools.
Well, see, I took French
to
in high school, unfortunately.
See, so. I thought we go. Were going to talk about Anthony's bubble bath.
Oh. We just waited to see how long Kate would try to get that in.
She's always
Anthony's
mind.
Own life
never
away
mind.
From work.
It's a family podcast.
Be that as it may, governor is heading
France,
to France and London, Paris and London, we should say, over the next few days on a little bit of a whirlwind international trip.
And reporters everywhere are clamoring to go along. You know, he's going to say goodbye to Tony Blair and meet with the new leader in France, and who knows, get France on board with global warming. This comes at a good time, right before the budget. But the governor's, I'm sure his staff will be continuing to negotiate. We'll probably have a budget vote in that time. Maybe that he's gone. The ceremonial rejection by the Republicans that seems to happen around this time every year. But this is just more of the same from our governor who likes to travel.
He has certainly taken that notion of California being a nation state farther than any chief executive you can ever imagine.
China, Japan,
going to
Mexico,
India.
Canada.
Israel, Austria, right? And going to India, yeah.
Truly, meeting with heads of state in a way that you just can't imagine the governor of Kansas, with all due respect to the governor of Kansas, doing.
Or Gray Davis. Or maybe you could Gray Davis, but it has a different implication when it's Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, it just gets more attention. If the governor, any other governor of California even, would make these trips and not get nearly the international publicity that Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's just what you get for being Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Do you think on that issue of the budget, just quickly, does he open himself to any criticism at all that he's flying away out of the country while we're at the last few days of the state fiscal year?
I'm sure there's a liberal group somewhere getting a press release ready.
And last I checked, I don't think the conference committee's done yet.
No. But I don't think there's anybody who really, quite frankly, and maybe it's kind of somewhat a, I don't know what kind of comment this is, but there are very few people who think we're going to make the July 1st deadline for a budget at this point.
I would say no.
I mean, even the governor said as much in an availability with reporters on Friday, you know. Mm. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, we've already missed one deadline, and June 30th is the approaching deadline for the legislature to pass something out and get it to the governor's desk. I think we'll clearly miss that, and we'll get a budget sometime later in July, maybe August.
I was going to say the running bet we had a couple of weeks ago was what, the vacation for legislators, July 20th.
Yes, sir.
So. Yeah. Bon chance, as they would say in Paris, on getting that done. That was my one attempt.
Suerte for those who were raised in California.
Right. We'll find some way to bring this into something that would be relevant to someone. Well, with that, I guess that's the end of another exciting podcast. We always walk away thinking, did we get out what we were going to get out? I think I should just wrap it up.
For KQED Public Radio.
Thank you. Just let me wrap the whole thing up. And yes. For Kate Fulmar from the San Jose Mercury News and Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers, and we will see you next time.